Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another Science Studio program. My name is Keith Pannell, and today we've got a special guest, special in many ways. First of all, he's an engineer, but this particular engineer, Dr. Emir Jose Macari, comes to us from the California State University at Sacramento, where he has a particular position as director of the California Smart Grid Center. So this is a major business. California, one of the major consumers of energy in this country, and he's the man who's going to make it smarter to distribute this energy. So, Emir, welcome to Science Studio.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here with you.
We're looking forward to this. But before we get into smart grids and engineers and your background, is it more important to us at this moment? How did you become, when you were a young kid, what were those driving moments that you said, I want to be an engineer?
Well, I am the son of immigrants and the grandson of immigrants. The name Emir, my paternal grandfather came from Lebanon to Mexico, where he married a Mayan French woman. On my mother's side, my maternal grandfather came from Sicily through Ellis Island and settled up in Boston and studied engineering. He ended up going to Cuba as one of his projects to build the Central Highway of Cuba and met my maternal grandmother. So there it is, a Sicilian, Cuban, Lebanese, Mayan, French, and it's a combination of things. So I wanted to emulate the accomplishments that my maternal grandfather had done. Since I was a kid, I looked up to him. Role models to us are very important. And that was my beginning, really. When I was 5 years old, I was very interested in engineering. I remember one time Santa Claus brought us a little carousel, three horses, because we were three kids. And in the morning, I was the first one to wake up. And the carousel was sitting there, and I was amazed by this thing that could go around. And I tried to figure out how it was holding the horses up. Well, what I did was go to the kitchen, grab a knife, and opened up the horse completely. And when my parents came down, they were shocked that I had done something like this to a gift from Santa Claus.
We'd be absolutely furious.
I think that was a moment that I remember clearly as wanting to understand how things worked.
Right.
And that was kind of an inquisitive mind. My mother says that, yes, I was destined to be an engineer.
All right. So how did you go about becoming an engineer? Where did you grow up?
Yeah. So I grew up in Mexico City in Guadalajara. I was born in Mexico City. Actually, I was born 6 days before a major earthquake that rocked Mexico City in 1957. They call it the El Temblor del Ángel, the earthquake of the Angel of Independence, because that's when the angel tumbled down.
Well, she did.
And broke into many pieces.
That's on Ave Reforma.
Exactly. Okay. Right in the center, near the American Embassy, right there in Avenida Reforma in Mexico City. We were supposed to be moving to another building because my parents wanted a bigger little house. My sister was already born. But I was late in coming. And my mother said, let's wait until the baby comes. And lo and behold, the building that we were going to move into collapsed completely. It was owned by a very famous actor of Mexico, Cantinflas.
Ah, yes.
So my mother then says that that was a precursor for me becoming an earthquake engineer, which is what I am today.
That's tremendous. So you studied in Mexico or studied in the U.S.?
I studied in Guadalajara through middle school, then went back to Mexico City, finished high school there. Then I went to UNAM. But there was one of the many strikes that always happens. So I ended up going to Virginia to visit my maternal grandfather, again, my role model,
right.
And started going to a community college where I needed to learn my English in order to be able to take classes. Chemistry, calculus, physics, all of it was very easy to me because the education I received in Mexico was so far ahead of what they were expecting.
You know, that's interesting, and it's another program. But the number of students that I see at the University of Texas at El Paso, they're U.S. citizens, but in fact the first 16 years of their life, they've lived in Mexico, and they come far better prepared. Now, I understand and that's just a thin veneer of the total student body. But it's an interesting thing which one could go into in some depth.
Yeah.
You were well prepared when you got here.
I was very well prepared on the sciences, the engineering courses, the mathematics.
And you were a citizen at that stage?
I was a citizen. Right. I was born a citizen because my mother was American.
Okay,
so I was a citizen, American born abroad,
okay.
But my English skills were zero. Yeah. I mean, I remember going on a date with a young lady. She never went out with me again because all I could say is, wanna dance? And so I knew that I needed to learn English pretty quickly.
Okay, well, you've done a great job, Amir. Okay, so let's go straight there to this position that you hold at Cal State University in Sacramento. Sounds very important. Director of the California Smart Grid Center. Tell us all the history of why there is such a center, what you plan to do, what have you done, et cetera.
Yeah, we're all familiar with electricity because we all depend on electricity. As a matter of fact, any economy depends on energy, energy production. If you have energy and water, you're able to develop an economy. So electricity delivery became a big thing in the United States, and it's centralized generation. So they generate in nuclear power plants or in dams or in gas generation.
And
then
coal-fired. It was coal-fired still there,
for many, many years, yeah. Fortunately, right now we are reducing coal because one of the biggest problems that we have right now with climate change, which I'll come back to smart grid, is that a third of the greenhouse gases that are right now in our atmosphere are directly related to burning coal for electricity production.
Just coal or coal and gas?
Only coal.
Okay.
Yeah,
right.
Coal. Gas is much cleaner burning.
Around the world?
Around the world.
Okay.
The United States being a huge contributor to that.
Okay.
But now we're selling coal to China, too. And in China, they're now seeing the detriments of this pollution.
Oh, I've seen photographs of Beijing and other places where it looked like London in the 1950s.
Exactly.
You cannot see 6 feet ahead of you.
Yep.
I remember going to school in those fogs, and it was just – it was unhealthy because
it
was green.
Black lung disease is happening all
right.
over in China right now,
right.
And it happened so fast.
Right.
So
the point is,
smart grid, the electric grid, mm-hmm. is of great importance. However, if Thomas Edison was to come back to life today and look at our electric grid, he would be amazed that we haven't done anything to advance what he had designed 100 years ago.
Right.
So now we are trying to integrate renewable energy at different points. You were telling me that you've just purchased for your home solar panels.
Right.
So now you're generating electricity. But our electric grid was not designed like that. It was designed for generating in one place, transmission of that at high voltages to a substation, from there distributing all the electricity into eventually getting into the urban regions, and it goes to a transformer near your home, and finally you get the electricity to the meter in your home and inside the home.
And the generation is usually quite often hundreds of miles away from the product.
Yes.
I mean, our energy here in El Paso, most of it, I believe, is generated by the Palo Verde power station out here in Arizona.
Yeah, and so there's tremendous amounts of losses that occur of that electricity as it's being transmitted,
right.
because there is resistance on the cables, so it gets dissipated as heat. So the closer that you're able to generate to where you're consuming the electricity, the more efficient you're going to be. But the electric grid was designed for electrons to flow only in one direction, from the generation all the way into your microwave oven or your electric shaver or whatever you want inside the home, your plasma TV. Now we're starting to see electrons flowing in different directions because we have generation being distributed by a lot of solar panels and solar farms, wind farms, all sorts of different things that are renewable, clean energy. So smart grid comes in to be a tool that gives us information about how this electricity is flowing. I compare it to if I was to go to the doctor and the doctor looks at me without doing any test. He looks at me and says, you have a heart problem. And I say, well, how do you know I have a heart problem? we don't know how the electricity's flowing because we have not been doing sensors and controls. So now with the onset of the internet, we put that on top of the electric grid.
How do you put it on top? I mean, how do you use the internet?
Yeah, so the internet now it's being used for controlling the electricity for sensors along every single part of the transmission and distribution.
So you've put sensors and monitors in places they weren't there before.
Correct.
In the pre-smart grid.
Yep.
You just didn't worry.
So
now we're having to do this, and we can hook up all the sensors on the internet so you can get a picture at any moment where is everything happening.
Exactly. Now we're able to diagnose things.
Right.
So it would be the same thing that then going to another doctor, and the other doctor says, oh, okay, well, let's do an EKG. Let's hook you up and try to see how your heart is doing. Let's measure your blood pressure. Let's do a test on your blood to see how your body is. And then do a diagnosis, and hopefully they hit it right.
Okay.
So now the smart grid is allowing us to do that, and we are being able to diagnose how we're using electricity, how we're wasting electricity, how we could become a lot more efficient. And another problem arises now that because we're using the internet, we got issues with cybersecurity.
Ah, well, yes. let's just the simple question is, you talk about the loss, thermal loss, when you transmit electricity. Approximately how much of the electricity that we generate in North America, for example, is lost?
Yeah, just from the transmission alone at high voltages before it even comes into the urban regions, we lose about 10 to 15%.
Okay.
Of what's generated.
And most of those lines are copper, which is one of the native best conductors. If we could get superconductors out there at high temperatures, we'd be saving 15% straight away, but we can't.
Absolutely.
Right.
Yeah. So right now, our material scientists, our chemists have only taken us to this point. Copper, well, now we hear how many people are stealing copper because it's right. become a really tremendous commodity. It's very much needed for any kind of transmission of electricity. It's one of the best conductors of electricity. So in smart grid, one of the other issues is to also have smart meters installed in the homes. So the electric meter that we always saw with a little rotating disc telling us how many kilowatt hours of energy we were consuming, which then translates into dollars that we paid to the electric company, now it's done with a meter that communicates directly with the electric company, but also can communicate inside the home. And inside your home, you will have what we call home area networks. The home area network, what it does, it allows the consumer to understand how much electricity each one of their devices is using.
Okay.
When you have children in your home, you know that you spend half of the time that you're at home turning off lights, turning off fans, turning off air conditionings, turning off TVs, because the kids, it's not coming out of their pocket.
No.
Well, what I instituted in my home was that I said, look, I'm willing to pay this much per month. If the bill is higher, your allowance at the end of the month gets reduced by that much. So it's behavioral issues, you know. We're trying to change people's behavior.
Right. They're insurance companies, car insurance companies. We just switched most of the cars in the house from one to another because this particular company monitors. They have this little gizmo in the driver's portion somewhere, and it tells you how many fast starts, how many dramatic breakings. And I've told my kids, I said, look, you know, this is the flat rate, all right? But, you know, if you don't save a certain amount, you know, you don't get any money. But if you save a certain percentage, because it does, it goes down, you know, they're getting money back. And they're changing their habits.
Yep.
And the idea of changing people's use of power. And, of course, one of the things you can do is just have this automatic on and off if there's no movement. You're listening to Science Studio. This is Keith Pannell talking here with Dr. Amir Jose Makkari from Cal State University, Sacramento, where he's the director of the California Smart Grid Center. We'll be back in one brief moment.
Welcome to Medical Discovery News. I'm Dr. Norbert Herzog.
And I'm Dr. David Neeson. Since the big scare of mad cow disease in the 90s, the number of cases of people infected with the human form of the disease has been steadily declining.
But a new study in Britain, where the disease was first diagnosed, found 1 in 2,000 Britons may still harbor the mutated proteins called prions. Prions are misfolded proteins which convert healthy proteins into misfolded ones that build up over time. In humans, mad cow, known as bovine spongiform encephalopathy, is variant Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease, or VCJD.
It's passed on to people when they eat infected beef neurological material such as spinal cord and brain, as well as the spleen and tonsil. The study tested for the presence of specific prions in 32,000 donated appendices, and 16 were positive, which extrapolates to 1 in 2,000 in the general population.
But that doesn't mean all these people will develop the disease, because it's possible in some people the protein may not lead to VCJD.
Prion buildup in the brain creates plaques that eventually cause brain damage. Once people begin showing symptoms, most die within 8 months. So far, 177 Britons have died from VCJD.
Scientists had believed the incubation period for VCJD was about 8 years, but now they think there are at least 3 variants of the misfolded prion protein.
So, many more people could be unaware they have the disease. Since there is no blood test for VCJD, carriers of it could unwittingly pass on this disease to others when they give blood.
Hopefully, blood tests will be developed to protect against the inadvertent transmission of VCJD. Much has been done on farms to prevent the spread of mad cow, but further foolproof approaches are still needed.
We are Drs. David Neisel and Norbert Herzog at the University of Texas Medical Branch and the Frank H. Netter School of Medicine at Quinnipiac University, where biomedical discoveries shape the future of medicine. For much more and our disclaimer, go to medicaldiscoverynews.com.
Welcome back to Science Studio. This is Keith Pennell with Dr. Amir Jose Makari, who is the director of the California Smart Grid Center at Cal State University, Sacramento. We've been talking about, you know, those elements of the smart grid that we can actually understand very carefully. You know, that there's going to be better ways of understanding where we're using. We can therefore use it more efficiently. You made a point at the beginning that the whole power generation in America is based upon big centers of generation and then the tentacles sending it out. Is that smart to begin with, or should we be thinking about El Paso having its own generation, you know, Phoenix having one, et cetera, et cetera?
Well, when it was first designed, it was a smart thing because they would only need to have X number of central generations that would take care of large expanses, and the entire country was able to receive electricity. Even very poor rural regions of the country were able to receive electricity. So it sounded like a smart idea, and actually most of Latin America followed that same idea. However, in Europe, you go to France, and most little towns have their own central generation. They generate their own electricity for the town.
And therefore, most of them have a nuclear power station, because 80% of electricity in France is generated by nuclear power.
Well, the nuclear stations actually are separated a little bit from populations. They
right.
do get transmitted, but they have tremendous amount of gas and now more renewable energy, and it's really close to the location. The shorter distance that you have to transmit the electricity, the less you're going to have losses.
Right.
But right before we went to break, I was mentioning the home area networks. Now, my mother lives in Mexico City, and electricity in Mexico is expensive, especially in Mexico City. And she told me one time, says, honey, the electric company suddenly increased my rates by 3 times. And, you know, I live alone here, so I can't be using that much electricity. I said, Mom, how could that happen? Well, in one of my trips to Mexico, I often go to Mexico City. I brought with me some devices. And what I was able to discover was that her compressor in her refrigerator was not working properly. So it was on all the time trying to keep the fridge cool. That is what the problem was. I went from device to device until I found it. So what I did, while she was out, I went out and dumped this refrigerator and bought a new one. And she was really happy that I bought a new refrigerator for her. The next month when I talked to her, she says, the electric company has fixed my bill now. It's back to what it was normally. So
I thought you were going to tell me there are other people, neighbors, tapping into her line. Because that happens.
That certainly can happen. So if you're able to diagnose inside your home
right.
how each one of your appliances and your devices are working, then you will make decisions, economic decisions yeah. and rational decisions as to how you're going to consume electricity.
So right now, is there a little device on the market that people can install or have an electrician install to do that analysis, and how much would it cost?
We are developing those devices right now. We have a lot of pilot projects in California already.
Mm-hmm.
And you know who's coming into that market is the cable TV providers, because they already have the access, they already have the bandwidth inside the home. So instead of the electric company owning your data of how electricity is being used inside the home, now the consumer will be able to own their own information and not have to share it with all sorts of other people.
All right.
So Comcast and all of these different companies that are cable TV providers are coming into that market because they've seen it, that it is an up-and-coming market.
It's an information feature.
Yes.
And you know, life is based upon what information you have. You can lead a better life.
Absolutely.
But is it actually out there now?
They would know what you're talking about. They would tell you that it's not available widely just yet. Mm. Right now, what they're instituting first is the security features in homes.
Okay.
So cameras and alarms for, you know, break-ins into the home.
So the cable people are going to become major players in just everything in your house.
It seems to be that it's going in that direction.
Who wants cameras in their house?
Anybody that sees any kind of stolen thing or anything to that effect.
Right. I mean, I would be very suspicious if I knew every time I did anything in my house there's a camera watching me. I'd move.
Well, you know, there's people, for example, that leave their kids with babysitters.
I understand the positives.
All of those things
but you can turn it on and off, I presume.
Yeah.
And who owns that? That's a legal issue, I guess.
It is a legal issue, but it's right now it's owned by the consumer.
Okay. So, mm-hmm. Let's get back to the smart grid. And you're the director of the California Smart Grid Center. The implication there is that, as in many things in North America, there are many authorities over different aspects of our life and our technology. California has a policy towards electricity and the grid, which can be different to Texas. The states control their own grid, is that correct? Even though
yes.
they translate from Arizona to El Paso?
Yeah, there's transmission being done across state boundaries, but
right.
each state has their regulations. California has always been a very progressive state, trying to look ahead of its time. And back in 2006, then-Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger signed an agreement, a new legislation, that it was the Assembly Bill 32, that basically ordered that by 2020, 30% of the electricity that is consumed in California had to come from renewable energy.
Right.
This was done in collaboration between a Republican and Democrat.
Was that pretty much both sides of the aisle?
Both sides of the aisle. Even President Obama now, and everybody's talking about that climate change is not to be discussed. It is already a fact. What are the implications of that is a different story.
Right.
You know? But, yeah. This was a climate change
by
bill.
2020 or 2030?
By 2020.
2020.
Yeah.
How are you doing?
Incredibly well.
All right.
So there are three major electric companies in California that are investor-owned utilities, but there are a lot of municipal electric companies that are owned by the community.
So then this transformation from a big central to more localized generation is well underway in California.
It is well underway in California.
And California leads the United States?
It leads the United States. New York is not far behind. If we look at curves of energy consumption in the United States, you'll see a curve of how much it has increased over the years, how much electricity we depend on more and more and more. In California, what has happened now, it reached a peak in the 90s, and now it's starting to go down to other levels of back in the 70s.
And that's because people are more conscious and because you're improving the grid? Is that?
And it is because of the legislation.
Okay.
You know, any of these improvements have a cost associated with it.
Yes.
So only legislation can really present the incentives or disincentives to go against it. There's penalties for not adhering to these mandates. Now Governor Jerry Brown, is talking about 50%. solar energy right. and renewable energy by 2030.
Okay.
That's how well it's gone.
All right. Well, that is it. That's good news. Let me ask a slightly different question then, because you know this business of generating electricity, you've got to keep generating it because you're not quite sure who's using it at the other end. All right. You can't always. Okay. You can say on 10 o'clock on a Sunday night in New York City in February, you're going to need a lot of power. And then 10 a.m. in July the 4th, you're going to need a lot of power. But in general, it's not so simple to predict, right? And then if weather goes out and you're generating power in Arizona and it's suddenly needed in Kansas, I mean, all of these things have to come into the smart grid.
Well, we as consumers are very demanding.
Yes.
In this country. We demand that our services are perfect.
Yeah.
So electric companies overgenerate electricity in order for that supply to always be there for people. So what happens to the overgenerated electricity at the end of the line? It just gets dissipated in heat. If we would be able to diagnose better and understand how the consumers are going to be, perhaps we don't have to overgenerate that much, just a tiny little bit to ensure that everything works properly. And we could be saving another 15 to 18% of our electricity by diagnosing and by really understanding the behavior of the consumers.
How do you do that? I mean, it sounds like nirvana.
Well,
right?
Again,
just to be 1% ahead of the curve,
yeah,
of demand. It's not easy, I think.
Not easy. So right now we have a lot of new optimization algorithms that are coming into the smart grid that are going to help with control of electricity at different points. The smart meters are sending information readily to the electric companies. So all of this information is being gathered and it's being optimized, and that's the result.
How quickly can a power generator ramp up? Right. You get this on demand, like, yeah, factories where gizmos come in the front door just as they're needed in the middle of the factory and they go out at the other end. It's sort of supply on demand.
Yeah.
That's not easy for electricity, I think.
It's not easy. There are some generation that is faster than others. Hydro, for example, is you just simply open the spigots and the water goes through the turbines and the electricity gets generated. Coal is very quickly ramped up as well. You just turn on the furnaces,
yeah,
and start burning, creating steam that,
right,
turns on. But nuclear,
solar, all the renewables,
gas,
right,
petroleum, even all of those are very – it takes a day or two,
right,
to ramp up a power plant.
Right.
So it is not on demand like that.
Yeah.
We have to be able to predict things ahead of time.
It's a simple question because in Texas we've got now lots and lots of wind power in the middle. You know, if you go to a place like Junction and you just see these, just like being in Indio in California, and when you enter into the Los Angeles basin, all these windmills. There's always a bunch that don't seem to be going around, right? You know, you think the wind is blowing, they should all be going around. The ones that don't, they just turn them off because they don't need. So there's each of these little pylons with a windmill on top is controlled from somewhere else, and you can make it not function.
Correct. You can lock the gears,
right,
in order for it not to be moving. As a matter of fact, if the wind speed gets up too high,
yeah, right,
they even turn them off because,
yeah,
it would
right,
overheat the turbines.
So that's one way then you can rather quickly in a wind generated electricity ramp up and ramp down.
Yeah. The problem with it is that wind and solar are both intermittent.
Yeah.
So if a cloud comes by, suddenly you see your electricity drop completely, your generation drop completely.
Right.
So where we're missing, the key player in this game of smart grid that is missing is storage,
yeah,
batteries. And that's – I blame the chemists for that.
You can do that.
because
there are other chemists.
Yeah. We are at a point that we have not been able to improve. Even though lithium ion and battery technology has increased, we are stumped. And right now, we have not been able to get into the next level of battery storage. If we're able to store electricity,
yeah,
well and maintain it, we could do everything and be very, very, very efficient, no longer having to worry about that.
I got to say thank you very much for being here. It's been a lot of fun. We've been talking to Dr. Emir Jose Macari, who is the director of the California Smart Grid Center at Cal State University in Sacramento. Been a tremendous pleasure. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Keith. It's been fun being here.
And we thank Norma Martinez of The Smile for putting the program together. We thank you, the listener, for being out there. Bye-bye.
Thank you. I'm Noemi Rojas with your Synapse Flash. Four students at Texas Tech's Paul L. Foster School of Medicine have opened a free clinic in Sparks, Texas, located on the eastern edge of El Paso County. The clinic is the medical school's first and only student-run clinic. It opened in late January inside the Socorro Ramirez Community Health Center. Read more at mcasynapse.org. Support for Synapse comes from the Sierra Providence Health Network.